Hello, and welcome to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast. This week, we're at the Malay Mile.
We're beside a lake.
Can you not rattle your glass with ice and it makes a noise every time?
Always complaining.
I know, I just want this to be good.
It will be good. People don't mind me drinking a little bit of whiskey on the pod.
I don't want a pickle. Just want to ride on my motorcycle.
We are at the Malay Mile. It's Sunday. Just to put a time and location on, we're in Grimsthorpe Castle. We're actually, we're not in the castle, we're down by the lake. All the racing's finished. But we've had a lovely weekend, haven't we, Ant?
It's been an absolute blast, as always.
Yeah, it really has. Apart from yesterday, because the weather was horrific.
But it made for good racing, because it got muddy and everyone wipes out in the mud.
The muddy,
fun.
Muddy mile. It was great. But we've grabbed hold of a great friend of ours who we haven't seen in far too long, who's popped over from Germany. It's Mr. Niels Peter Jensen.
You say my name right. You sound German.
Thank you. Yeah, very
yeah,
good.
That is good, yeah.
That is very good.
Yeah, all is good.
Niels, how are you?
Great.
A bit tired. We're all a little
really
bit tired.
You know, yeah. You know, when you hang with Anthony and yourself,
things
you
get
might
crazy.
Get tired.
There might be a bit of fatigue kicking in at some point. Niels, for people that don't know you, you are a former mountain biker, BMX racer.
I started with BMX back in the days, but when I was 17, I moved to America and I decided to turn pro. My parents said, no, you finish school first. And I said, well, I can do that in America. And then I just paid some attention to school and did some homework, but I decided to spend more time on my bike training. And I signed my first contract in Switzerland when I was 19. First race, second place in the world championships. And then my mom said, okay, maybe it's the right decision. Maybe you should ride bikes and don't try to find
a
normal job.
Indoor games.
Yeah.
Maybe you're onto something here. You were the first Red Bull sponsored athlete in Europe, is that correct?
In mountain biking.
In mountain biking, yeah.
1996. We had to snuggle the Red Bulls over the border from Austria to Germany because it was forbidden in Germany.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was good times. They helped me a lot because back in the days there was not much sponsoring. So Red Bull was the first brand who understood, okay, if we take these crazy kids and paint their helmets and let them do what they love to do, we get some good coverage in magazines. Back in the days, we had only magazines and TV. So they made it possible for me to concentrate and focus just on mountain biking and sent me around the world. So they gave me the opportunity to see the whole world and doing what I love to do, riding bikes.
You were also one of the first athletes to have your own PlayStation game.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of bragging rights, having your own computer game is probably about as cool as it gets, isn't it?
But the fun thing is, they asked me if I can do the promotion for the game. I love to design the game with them, with engineers. And so I moved to Tokyo for a few weeks. And then I could travel 1 year around the globe to do all the filming, you know. So they put a suit on me with all this wire stuff on my body so they can do all the movements. And I remember we needed to do some jumps. So like my signature jump was a Superman C-grab. And then we couldn't find a way how we could do that. So I said, what about if we just get like a climbing gear and I just hang myself up underneath the balcony of the hotel and then we just film it there. And so like, all right, let's do that. So I did all the tricks hanging down from the balcony and they were filming it.
In Tokyo?
No, that was in Italy, Garda Lake. Okay, cool. And then I could travel the whole world. And then they said, okay, now it's promotion time. So they sent me to all these amazing TV shows and it was all about e-gaming and this and that. I'm like, I didn't know what to say because I was not into playing PlayStation. Good. I had no idea how to use a joystick or a controller, I don't know how you call it. And then we had to do the promotion tour and I had to play against kids who were really, really good. And I was like the good mountain bike rider who knows how to go fast and jump. And
but you
I
sucked
think,
at your own game.
All the kids are kicked my ass.
Did you not get like special cheat codes?
No, I don't know if they had it back in the days, PlayStation 1 and 2. So I'm waiting for Anthony's next question about PlayStation.
No, it's not about PlayStation.
He keeps making fun of me because I'm not a really good businessman. And I was super stoked about having a PlayStation game, but I didn't make any money out of it.
They made millions and you got like 50 grand or something.
Yeah, they sold 1.9 million games and I think I got money. But
back in the day, 50 grand was pretty good paycheck.
You had no idea what the potential.
You must be rich. I'm like, why? They sell so many of your games. I'm like, and? Yeah, you get money out of it, right? And I'm like, no, they gave me money in the beginning. Yeah. Oh, anyway, it was fun. And you know, still today, old people now, they say like, I remember you from PlayStation. I played you. So it was really fun. And I think it helped also to bring mountain biking more into the world of young kids, because back in the days, mountain biking was huge. It was big, but it was not as massive as it is today.
I was watching some mountain biking the other day. I think it was the European Championships.
I don't know. I just heard that.
Quite dangerous, mountain biking.
Really dangerous.
On the internet, I see so many guys hit trees. Well, one of our good friends here, and a fellow Channel 9 team, Moto Polo teammate of ours, he famously knocked himself out last year before the Moto Polo race, and we weren't sure if he was going to be able to join the team because he had a concussion.
Yeah, he launched himself on a mountain bike course, hasn't he? And literally launched himself, pile-drived himself into the dirt. Head first.
It happens a few times. I broke a few bones, but I remember one big crash in Kaprun, Austria. There was like this, the pole of the lift, you know, the chair lift.
Yeah.
Oh. And they decided to make the fastest part of the track right next to the ski lift. And there was like a rod, and I kind of like went into it with my front wheel, went over the handlebar and straight into the lift.
Oh.
That was not nice. So they decided to change the racetrack, but then there were trees. So yeah, it happens.
It was a bit late for you though.
Yeah.
Protection, I guess, has come a long way with... Do they ride with airbags on downhill BMX yet?
You mean protection?
Airbag suits, but it would have just been a helmet.
Dainese was like the first brand who understood that mountain biking is dangerous, but it's also like a fast-growing sport. So let's design like proper chest protection, back protection and all that. I used it for a few times, but back in the days I was like, no, I need to feel the wind, the bike. I had no gloves, no chest protection. I had knee pads. I always wear knee pads. And I remember UVX came up to me and said, hey, we're going to design a helmet and we're going to call the model Nightmare. I'm like, wait, the name is wrong and the design of the prototype is really wrong. So I used back in the days for a while motocross helmets. And then Troy Lee came from America and they said, okay, we make cool, proper Troy Lee mountain bike full face helmets. And they offered me a sponsorship. So they did a nice paint job. So that was good. But other than that, there was always protection, but it was just the beginning of finding out what part of the body should be protected. We always thought, oh no, if we have too much protection, we can't pedal and, you know, we don't want it.
It's clunky.
Yeah. And then after racing, I decided to go do dirt jumping and free riding. And then we decided, okay, we don't need full face helmets because when we do backflips, we want to see where we're landing. And didn't use any gear because we thought it's nicer, cooler to wear no t-shirts and just have tattoos on our bodies and pretend we're tough guys. So yeah, the protection part, I learned about protection when I started riding motorcycles. Then I really understood, okay, it's good to protect yourself because when you crash, you just get up and continue.
Yeah.
And I remember we did a trip to Scandinavia. You had a full face helmet and I had Vans sneakers, normal tight jeans. I think I had a leather jacket and had an open face helmet. And I remember we were riding in the middle of the night, freezing my ass off, following trucks so we can go faster. 125cc on motorcycles. And I'm like, why am I wearing an open face helmet?
So nice and comfy in my full face.
Yeah, riding motorcycles taught me how to protect myself.
So I raced BMXs before I started riding motorcycles. So when I was 11, 12, I didn't have money to buy a helmet. So I just took my BMX helmet. And you remember BMX helmets in the early 90s? You can almost squish them with your hand. You know what I mean? They're really soft. They're like made of plastic. They weren't really fiberglass and hard shells with foam and everything. They were just like a bit of pillow and some out of plastic shell. And I rode my first KX80 with that thing. And me and my buddy he was on the back and we were going down along the tracks in fifth gear, tapped out. And there was like this manhole cover And it was like a jump. So we're like, yeah, let's hit this jump at fifth gear flat out with two guys on a dirt bike. So we did it. And just before the jump, the compression of like hitting the transition of the jump compressed the swing arm, and the chain was really loose. So the chain came off and wrapped around the back wheel and locked the back wheel just as we launched off the thing and spun the thing sideways. So we kind of high-sided, but in the air as we went over the jump. And I flew through the air one way, and I landed right up against the telephone pole and crashed into the telephone pole, stuck up against it. And then my buddy came flying into me and split my helmet straight in two. I was like, okay, maybe I should get an actual helmet for a motorcycle.
So how did how long did you ride competitively for, and then free riding? When did motorbikes start to creep into your life?
So I did 10 years World Cup racing. So that was really serious, healthy life. And then I had a really, really bad accident in Austria, in Caprun, at my last World Cup race. I was riding for Italian company, Zentesi. Zentesi is also known, like, in the motorcycle industry. They used to, I don't know if they still do, but they used to make frames for Ducati motorcycles.
Oh, right.
So they took it really serious, like next level Formula One style, with our own doctor, masseur person. We had a big Formula One truck they bought from the Formula One. So it was really proper racing. And there was a French guy, Cedric Garcia. He's like Anthony, but from France and riding mountain bikes.
Right.
Same thing, same okay. character. And there was like one big jump, 40 meters long. And it was a very steep kicker. And we thought it's too steep, but we both had like BMX experience. And we said, well, we just have to do this and that. And I said, so between him and me, it was always a competition about who's doing the first move, who's going to jump first. So I knew it's going to be tricky, but I wanted to do it before him. So I was flying down the hill and overjumped it by like a couple meters.
Oh.
I would say at least 6, 7, 8 meters.
Landed
my front wheel, the frame broke, and then I still had my hands on my handlebar, and then the rear part of my bike was attached to the cables. So the handlebar hit my upper legs, and then just landed straight on my face, shoulder, and my hip. So I broke my hip, 7 ribs, shoulder, and I was like completely knocked out. And I didn't remember anything. And then they cut my contract while I was in the hospital trying to recover.
Oh, wow.
I did bad marketing for them, because that contract says if something happens to the bike, we have to bring it back to the truck, make sure that nobody sees the broken, whatever broke on the bike. But I was like knocked out, so I couldn't take care of that situation.
Yeah.
And then I got the letter that they need to finish my contract. And then I decided in 2000 to do my own mountain bike brand. And then started my own brand, and we put some skate style and punk rock in it. And yeah, we were like for 12 years, like the brand. We did like just dirt jumping and slopestyle and free riding. And then I just got really sick of doing the same thing over and over again. And I remember one day I was at a big trade show, a guy I know since 20 years, and he was working for 19 years for Magura. I don't know what brand it was. And then all of a sudden he told me the same thing about the competitors, like Formula One. Yeah. It's a brand that make brakes in mountain biking. And then he told me the same thing, and I looked at him like, wait, you said 19 years, this is the best, and now somebody else pays you, and now this is the best? And I went back to the hotel and said, well, do I want to talk just about brakes, suspension, how fast, how high, and how cool do tricks in there? You know, is that what I want for the rest of my life? And I said, okay, I want to start from the very beginning, and I want to be happy when I see a picture of myself in a magazine, if somebody comes up to me and recognize me for something. Because in mountain biking, it was for 20 years like, oh, this is MPJ, okay, he's in magazines for many times. So I didn't appreciate it anymore. It was normal, and I didn't really like that feeling. So I decided I'm going to do something from the beginning. I want to be a nobody. I want to have the same experience that I'd had for the past 20 years, but with something else.
Right.
And then I decided I want to go into the motorcycle industry, because I love two wheels. This is my life. I feel more comfortable on two wheels than on my leg, on my feet. And then I just started from scratch, trying to do custom bikes, doing trips, meeting people like you guys. And then I really, yeah, I remember my first picture in the magazine. I was super happy. And I felt like I was a kid again, you know, like, look, I'm in a magazine, in a motorcycle magazine, look.
Yeah.
It was a small picture, I remember that. But then all of a sudden, like, people invite me to events, and all of a sudden, I hit my own booth at the Intermod, I hit my own booth at the EICMA, and all of a sudden, I was part of the motorcycle industry. But also then, like, I think you too, Anthony, a few things got boring, and then I just felt like I want to do more traveling, more riding, and not going to trade shows.
The Nod is proudly supported by the British Motorcycle Insurance Company, a new digital-first insurance platform built for the good of the rider community. Sign up as a rider to join their waiting list or register your interest as a community partner on the website thebmic.co.uk. This is insurance powered by the people. It is insurance for riders built on community. Insurance is the ultimate grudge purchase. The British Motorcycle Insurance Company wants to filter out the things that slow riders down so you can focus on what you love. Community-based, transparent, and digital, the next generation of motorcycle insurance.
We both started similar way into the motorcycle industry, and we didn't really necessarily have the money to ride the bikes that we'd loved. So we thought, okay, well, if we get into this business, then we'll be around the bikes and we'll kind of work and make money and we can eventually ride these bikes without having to own them, kind of thing. And all of a sudden, one day you turn around and you never ride bikes and you're just like constantly either building them or trying to sell them or marketing them or doing trade shows. And,
that's true.
All of a sudden you're like, shit, I've been working in this industry for how many years and I never ride bikes because I'm always busy working.
Good that you
with
say
them,
that,
you know?
It is. Like, when I was a professional mountain biker for 20 years, but didn't really enjoy it. I mean, I did. I love it. But I had to ride bikes, and I had to go fast, and I had to jump high, and I had to do my tricks. It was not because I want to do it.
Yeah.
Now I ride with my kids, and I do the same thing like back in the days. And I'm not as good as back in the days, so I take it more easy. But I do the same thing with more passion and more freedom. And it's the same thing with motorcycle riding. I was never a new level building bikes, but I built bikes and people appreciate the bikes at, you know, at the bike shed or at some other events I went to. But I realized I don't really ride bikes anymore. And then, I mean, this Corona thing, you know, like it all put us down for a few years. That really made me think about, okay, what I want to do. Do I want to be a customizer or do I want to, you know, try to do what Anthony is doing or, you know, like this and that. I thought about it and said, no, I want to ride and I want to travel the world because that's what I really love, riding the world and meeting people, you know, coming here to the Malamayo and making new friends, seeing you guys. So then there was a point where I said, okay, I'm just going to travel and do adventure trips, and other projects came across, you know, my charity project, Helmets for India.
Yeah, I was going to dive into that on how, because that's, you know, quite an incredible kind of story and what you've created and the people you're doing it with Royal Enfield and that.
And what you've achieved in the laws, and you've managed to change the law in India, so made it
I don't know if it was me, but I think the project and the coverage we got and the people who supporting it, they also helped.
Yeah, that. So Helmets for India is it's a charity you set up. It's an awareness thing about getting people wearing motorcycle helmets when they ride their bikes. Where in this country and in most of the Western world, some weird states in America, it's the law that you have to wear a motorcycle helmet, and it's generally accepted that that's a good thing because it's safe and motorcycles can be dangerous. But in other parts of the world, that is not the case. And you saw this and experienced this in India.
Right, yeah. Well, somebody gave me the chance to be a TV host. We had different shows. I had four shows, and there was one show, they called it Extreme, and then it was like a subtitle, Extreme Living, Extreme Sports, and Extreme Jobs. I had basically a bucket list in Extreme Sports. I said, I want to learn skydiving. I want to ride a skateboard down the deepest place, down, you know, like into like underground. Anyway, like different plans, crossing a river on a skido. And then this Extreme Living thing, they came up with some ideas, and their first show was, or the first idea for the first show was like, okay, we're going to drop you into the biggest slum of India, Mumbai slums, and you're going to live there for 5 days. And I said right away, no way, I'm not going to do that. Find another person for that. I'm not going to do that. At the end of the day, they said, they told me a few things, how they make sure I would come out alive and this and that. And then, you know, I said, like, maybe it's a good chance to see that country. And if I don't like it, just go back to the hotel and stay in the hotel and wait for the flight back home. But 24 hours later, when I landed in Mumbai, I'm like, this is the greatest place on earth. It's amazing. I really call it my second home, because when I go there, I really feel like home. And then there was this one accident, this one moment where I saw a motorcycle accident and a little kid got, he was involved in the motorcycle accident. The kid was sitting in the back of the scooter and I don't know if the kid died, but it really was not looking good. And I had a head injury. And then I said, like, why was the kid not wearing a helmet, you know? Because I was there for a few days. I didn't really pay attention if the people ride helmets there, you know, because there's so much going on. And so much beautiful stuff to see, and so much stuff where you say, oh my God, this is crazy. But I didn't really pay attention to the motorcycle riders or scooter riders. And then I asked a few people, so why you don't wear a helmet? I really freaked out because I have four kids. And I thought it was like just a stupid helmet and that kid would just walk away. And a helmet's not expensive. And why the dad didn't say wear a helmet, you know? So I wanted to find out. And then I got so many stupid reasons, stupid answers to my question. It was like, yeah, it's too hot. My religion is not allowing me to wear a helmet. And then some people said, no money. When they said no money, I'm like, okay, maybe that's a reason. You know, I understand. If you don't have money and you need money for food, I understand. So I said, okay, I'm going to go back and I'll make sure I come back again with a bunch of helmets and give it away to kids and mothers. Because most of the time, the kids got injured and the mothers. Because the father sits in the front and has... They have helmets most of the time. And then I just came up with the name Helmets for India. Went to the EICMA, found a few brands, helmet brands who supported me. And then I invited some riders because I thought, if I want to make a change in India, I cannot go there as a German guy and say, hey, wear a helmet or you die.
Yeah.
I needed to find a way where I can get their attention. So I said, okay, let's get some artists from all over the world who are well known or who are very creative. And I sent them helmets, they paint the helmets, and then I show the helmets in India. And after my trip through India, I'm gonna show it at the Malamaya, at the MotoGP, at the bike shed. So I showed it at so many events in 2019. And then we auctioned the helmets, and with the money we, you know, invest in making a change in India, you know, buying helmets. There's a hospital where who take care of kids who suffer motorcycle accidents and have heavy head injuries. So that's how it all started. And then I brought some other riders so we can go to the kids and tell them stories about how cool it is to wear a helmet. I think, first of all, I think it's cool to wear a helmet. They look great. They look cool. Also, I think it's, for me, when I put a helmet on, people see, oh, this is a motorcycle rider, you know. It gives a cool feeling, you know, like, no, this guy is cool. He rides a motorcycle. He's not a car driver, you know? And also, like, the only place where I have my freedom and nobody can talk to me, nobody can just ask me questions. If it's just me and I'm stressed out, I just put on my helmet, put the visor down. I'm like, I'm in a different world. So I wanted to transport that feeling into India to tell them, hey, listen, be part of our cool community. Wear a helmet. It's cool to wear a helmet. And it worked out the first year, 2019. I invested basically all my savings for this project, because it's a lot of money flying there, getting the bikes, shipping the helmets, you know, doing the website, you know it. And then Corona came, and then it was for me like, okay, this is it. I'm over. I cannot travel. I don't have the money. I don't make money. And then Royal Enfield got in contact with me and said, hey, listen, we would like to support you. And they helped me in a big way. So I can now just concentrate and focus on Helmets for India. And that gave me the opportunity to be more creative, to do more stuff, and to get more awareness in India and get more coverage. And we got coverage on the front page of Times of India. It's the biggest newspaper in the world because it's a big country. And it said in German letters, Danke, it means thank you. It says, Danke Germany, and that underneath the text says, why does it have to take a German motorcycle rider to come to India and make a change? And that made a big buzz in India. People didn't really like it, you know,
it's from the government. Yeah.
And then, you know, more and more people got in contact with me. So now it's, I got invited last year to go to New Delhi, and there was Royal Enfield in UNESCO, and at the end of the day they announced they're going to change the law in India, and now you do have to wear a helmet, not in all states of India, but in the main cities and stuff. So there's really great things going on in India concerning road safety. And now we're not just doing, you know, creating awareness for wearing a helmet, it's also like we are working with an NGO in India. They make pavement out of recycled plastic. So last time I was in India in November, we fixed potholes in India. And they fixed already over 45,000 potholes across India. Because a lot of accidents happens outside of the big cities because there's no light. And then they just ride the bikes into a big pothole, go over the handlebar and don't wear helmets. And then, so I think it's not just about wearing helmets now. It's also about, you know, creating awareness for safety gear, fixing roads, making sure we have more lights and, you know, fences. Oh, yeah, the fences around
guard rails.
Yeah,
guard rails.
So it's really a lot of things happening at the moment.
So what's next?
Well, I did a few adventure trips. I just did one big trip last year, September, that it took me a while to organize. I heard about this, the highest pass in the world you can ride up your motorcycle, the Umling La Pass. It's 19,900, it's almost 20,000 feet high. And when I heard about this pass, I said like, okay, let's go out there. And a lot of challenges, because if you don't live in India, it's a military area, you're not allowed to go up there. So through the connection of Hamlets for India, we got the rights to go up there. At the end of the day, the last border check said, no, you can't go here. The military base said like, yeah, go, you have the right paperwork. But the last local police station said, you're not allowed to go here. I was like, oh my God, we planned 3 months this trip and now I can't go up the Umling La Pass. But then I met a local guy and he said, well, just take the back roads. It's not a pavement road, but it's a gravel road. And I said, it's even better. Show me. And then he showed me. And it took me like 6.5-7 hours to go up there. I passed out once, crashed on my bike. But at the end of the day, I made it up to the highest pass of the world.
And is there a film of that? Did you make a film of that?
There's a film, yeah. Go on YouTube. So yeah, YouTube, NPJ. Above the clouds, because above it was really, it was above the clouds.
Yeah,
they were underneath me. So I created this name when I reached the pass. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm above the clouds. How cool is that?
Yeah, on a motorbike.
On a motorbike.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. What were you riding? A Himalayan?
Yeah.
Royal Enfield.
Yeah. Perfect bike for that, because you can fix it even up there. There's always somebody who knows how to fix the Himalayan Royal Enfield bike, and you don't need much power to go up there because your body has no energy at all. So it was good to have less power, because my body had no power left. It's like, I think it's like walking on the moon. You just surviving.
Did you take oxygen up there with you?
I did. They said if you want to go up there, you need to have oxygen mask. So in Manali, you can buy oxygen mask everywhere, and cylinders, small ones. So I put a cylinder in my backpack, and once in a while I sniffed some oxygen.
Just like small pony, for like scuba diving pony bottles, just the small ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like not expensive, 7-8 euros. And I think we both have to, we still have like something on the bucket list.
Well, we've been trying to do, we did a pilot TV show for Red Bull, going back 2013 or something like that.
Too long ago.
We plan to ride 3,500 through the Amazon jungle, 3,500 miles through the Amazon jungle on hardtail choppers. Because everybody does it. Because the Amazon jungle, the Amazonic Highway, it's not as like crazy. Because when we were doing the research for it, we thought it was going to be like really rough and like proper off-road, bumpy, like crazy going through the jungle. It's not. It's actually logging trails. So it's, unless it's like monsoon season, it's pretty straightforward, you know. Yeah. What I mean, it's like dry, like dirt, it's like Green Lane all the way. So we're like, well, how do we make this challenging if we go closer to monsoon season? So it could be like roads washed out, plus we'll do it on hardtail choppers with no suspension.
And we did it. We went to what's it called?
We were in Marbella, where I lived, and we did a 5-day pilot episode, and we built two hardtail choppers, 125cc hardtail choppers, and we rode for 5 days through the mountains, like where you ride enduro in Marbella. Well, you've got an apartment out there, you know what it's like. But through, like, we'd get up in the mountains,
and you'd be, we're wearing jeans, t-shirts, open face helmets, and all our gear, tents on the back of our bikes with big sissy bars, and we'd be like climbing this mountain, and then all of a sudden you'd see like 10 guys in like full KTMs and all their enduro gear riding proper enduro. They're like, what the fuck?
But
are
we
you
did
doing
proper
here?
Off-road riding. Yeah. Remember when we went to Mojito, the Mojito
yeah.
field?
Yeah, yeah. We
that was the best story. So there was like a big field of mint, and then we had to cross a river. We had major fun riding through the river.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they said, okay, you guys can play around a little bit. So we were like fifth gear, completely throttled wide open.
When I jumped the...
And then all of a sudden, I just see Anthony from going 100 to zero in less than a second. Almost going over the handlebar.
So what we did, we were in this dry lake bed up in Istan, just above Marbella. We'd finished filming for the day. The drone pilot took off, and the trailer and the production crew just said, oh, you guys can play around. We'll meet you back in Marbella. And we still had our GoPros on. He had one on his, I think you had one on your chest, and I had one like on the handlebars of my bike. And so we rode through this dry lake bed, through this lake, and I found this, there was like almost like a natural tabletop jump. And we kind of went over it in like third gear and kind of like a little bit of a jump. And we're like, these bikes can handle it. Like, these are hardtail choppers with ape hangers, not just normal ape hangers.
They're
sharp, points. They're no bends. They're like welds, 90 degree angle belts. So they're like sharp points looking straight in your face. So we go over it. I'm like, Nails, I'm going to hit this jump like flat out. I'm going to fly over this thing. We get like a huge run up, like probably way too far. Like we were tapped out in fifth gear as fast as these little 125s would go. Nails is behind me. We still got the GoPros on. I'm like, this is going to be epic. And I hit this jump.
It was epic. It was for me to watch.
Yeah. So we had no suspension. We had Springer front ends. And we had like, I put two coils from an old Softail under my seat. Like, but they were really big coils. So when I hit the jump, all the suspension that I had kind of compressed in the front, and the seat, my ass went down into the seat, compressed the seat, the springs in the seat. So as soon as I got to the top of the jump, it pushed the bike away from me and flung me out of the seat. So I did a complete Superman, right? The bike is like completely flat down, and I'm flying like Superman with my feet behind me going, oh shit, this is not going to end well, on a chopper, right through the air. It must have been 40 feet through the air.
And I'm
like, I got to get back on this thing. I'm trying to get back on. And I don't know how I did it, but I got the bike back under me. One foot hit the foot peg, and we had solid foot pegs, almost snapped my ankle, but I landed it, and like we turned around, and I was just so happy to land it because I knew we had to go the GoPros, and like, that's going to be amazing footage for this film. And threw the bike down, and we're like, high five. And then we like go back, and we ride all the way back home. It's like an hour ride back to the production thing, back to my house, and we're like giving our GoPros, here's our cards, and we're all like sitting around, we have drinks, and we're like, let's see this footage. And then all you see is us just going wham. We get to the beginning of the jump, and the GoPros die, and you see nothing. And it's just black. So we didn't get any of the footage. We ran out of battery.
Got it.
But, I think it's a sign. It's started raining. I think that's it.
Yeah, that was fun.
It's great to have you back in England, back at the Mile. You've been away for a couple of years. We've missed you here.
3 years, but it felt like half of my life not being here.
Yeah, yeah. I came to this event with you in 2015, 16. And every year since then, we were always here together racing, and you took a hiatus.
Next year, racing, for sure. We did some racing. We did the Moto Polo.
We did the Moto Polo.
Next year, racing.
Champions, third year running.
What? I can't hear you. It's still racing going on.
Still the last
it's after
of the dregs
racing.
Of racing.
Why is it raining, Ben? Why? Why is England always shitty weather?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Massive thanks, Nils. It's been an absolute joy to catch up with you and see you. Cool to hear some of your stories and your career and the stuff you've done. It's pretty sick.
It's been beautiful. You, now?
You can say thank you if you want
to
say thank you. It's up to you, mate. It's been a joy. Mate,
all the people who've been on your podcast, they are like big people, like big guys, big legends.
Mate, you've got your own computer game.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
and I got my own signature card. Did I tell you that?
You got your own signature card?
Yeah, the Suzuki Jimny NPJ signature car. Signature car, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Damon Hill's not even got a
computer
game.
And another thing, 8 years I did Nutella TV commercial. You know Nutella, chocolate cream?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, same thing.
You did
I did it, 8 years.
You were the face
before
of Nutella.
Boris Becker, before the tennis legend,
and
Boris Becker.
We might have to edit this out, but I'm also going to reveal a secret about Niels. When he was touring in the States with Red Bull, there was a little band touring as well, and their van broke down. They needed a ride, and so Neil said, hey, jump in my Winnebago, you can come tour with me. So the pretty little girl in the van, she was a good singer, really cute. That girl happened to be, who?
I remember the name of the band.
Well, she was from the Black Eyed Peas, just a small little band, you know.
The Black Fergie. Eyed Peas, Fergie. Yeah.
They were not band. Big back then, it was 2000.
It was her and Will I Am, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had a dance battle with Will I Am, and then it just one thing came to the other.
That's quite fun.
Yeah, they have a few more stories, but I didn't know how open you are with like real interesting stories. Gumball, all these. But next time, okay?
Yeah.
Next time, Mother Maya, when yeah. It's sunny.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Tschüss. Danke sehr.
Danke. Bitte.
Danke, bitte.
Alles Gute.
You've been listening to The Nod, a mindful motorcycle podcast. Thanks as ever to our sponsors, the British Motorcycle Insurance Community. Great to have them on board. We're going to be back next week. Some stuff coming up. We've got to get hustling. We've got lots to plan, but
we're
getting
going to
there.
A track. Did someone say we're going to track?
We might be doing something at Silverstone coming up soon. Anyway, it's all to come. It's all going to be fun. Lots of interesting things coming up, but I hope you've enjoyed this one. We've had a great time at the Malay Mile. Thanks to Robert and Johnny for putting it on. We've met a few fans, actually. Quite a few people have come up and said they're enjoying it. So thanks to you for listening and for being kind to us. And
one listener actually said that he listened to the podcast, actually got into motorcycling, and actually heard about the Malay Mile, and he came here, learned how to ride a bike, bought a bike, and came to the Malay Mile just because of the podcast.
Yeah, on his own.
On his
legend.
Own.
Legend. Wow, such a nice
cool
dude as well.
Turns out, and he was a runner on my TV show on Goblin Works for the season one.
And yeah, he works with Grace Webb as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Grace had been kind of talking to him about the pod, and he got involved, and now he's a biker.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I got to catch a plane. Bye, guys.
Thanks, Niels. Thanks to everyone. See you next week.
See you guys.
Oh my God. That was a nice outro from you guys.
Yeah, it's good, mate. I've got to catch a plane. Fucking rock star.